a Cincinnati edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. While it can be tough to think about taxes during the holidays, by following a few year-end tips, you can prepare now to save on your taxes due in April. And the GOP tax plan could be signed into law soon, so it's a good time to start thinking about how those new rules could affect you next year. Joining us are Agnes Spelker, Senior Tax Manager with Barnes Denig, Bartlett & Company Wealth Planning Services Advisor Jason Katz, and Chris DeSimio, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. We'll start off by discussing year-end tax advice, so if you have any year-end tax questions, give us a call at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And later in the show, we'll talk about preparing for the new tax law. Again, the number to call if you have any questions, 513-419-7100. Agnes, good afternoon.
Thank
good
you.
Good to see you. And Jason and Chris, good to see both of you as well.
It's always a pleasure, Mark.
So let's start by talking about that year-end advice. Agnes, what is the top thing on your list that you tell people they should be focusing on as December 31st approaches?
The top thing on my list always at the end of the year is accelerating expenses. And what do I mean by that? I mean, if you have a state and local tax payment, maybe you make a fourth quarter payment, maybe make your Ohio payment in December rather than making that in January, and also paying real estate taxes maybe ahead of time.
And that way you're able to deduct them for this year? Is that why you do that?
Uh-huh. Now, you do have to think about AMT, but other than that, that is a good plan.
The alternative minimum tax.
Alternative minimum tax can trigger the AMT if you do this? That is correct.
And you'd want to try to avoid that if you can.
It's not a big deal whether you avoid it or not. You're not going to pay any more tax whether you've got it, whether you're in AMT or not.
Okay. Jason, what's the key thing you're telling people to focus on this time of year?
Yeah, similar items. Really talking about prepaying state taxes, property taxes, but also looking at tax loss harvesting. So if you have some stocks or securities that have a loss, possibly taking that loss this year. To offset any gains that you have. Other things, charitable contributions, always getting those in, as well as making sure that you make those required minimum distributions from your IRA.
Required minimum distributions. We've had a number of questions that came in on the RMDs, mm-hmm. and I guess we'll just start going through those at this point. We have a question from Sandy in Liberty Township, and she says, I have a small account from the place where I retired this past June. And she says, this is the first time I'm required to take any of this money. And they say I have to take about $650. And the fee, she says, for doing this is $125 each time. And she wants to know, is this normal? She says, none of my husband's accounts have charged fees to take his RMDs. So I'm sitting here wondering, does this sound like anything you've ever heard of before?
No, I would say I would be shocked if there's a fee associated with that. I think what's happening here is I think she's talking about the tax withholding on the distribution.
It sounds about what a tax withholding would be for that amount of money.
That works out to be 20% on the button, which is kind of a default. So that sounds more like the tax withholding, mm-hmm. the federal level.
Yeah. If they are taking some kind of a fee, though, and she's dissatisfied, she could always move the account, couldn't she?
Of course.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, explain what an RMD is for those who might not know, Jason. What is that?
Sure. Sure. If you have an IRA, starting when you turn age 70 and a half, which is a funny kind of age, but by April of the year following the year you turn age 70 and a half, you have to take a minimum amount out of your IRA each year. And the intuition behind that is the IRS, they want their tax money. And this money has been growing tax deferred over time. And the mechanism for them to, for you to get the money out of the IRA and pay taxes on that is the required minimum distribution. So it's a calculation that's done by your custodian. And usually in the first couple of years, it's about 3-4%.
What are they calculated on? Expected lifespan, and they divide the amount of money that you have by that lifespan? Is that how they figure
it? Yeah, there's a table that the IRS puts out, Uniform Life Table, and it's a simple, pretty simple calculation. They take the value of the account and divide it by a certain factor based on your age.
Yeah, it's normally simple. I mean, the first year, most everyone in the industry has the number 27.4. memorized because that's what you divide
27.4 is the standard number.
Right, right. And, okay. And again, this table, this called the uniform single table, does not it has a little hint of actuarial soundness to it, in that the following year, just because you've made it in another year doesn't mean that you take 1 year off your life expectancy. You only take .9. So it goes from 27.4 to 26.5 and so on. But what that means is that you don't have, first of all, you don't have to spend it. You just have to get it out and pay taxes on it. Secondly, it's as Jason said, it's the year after you turn 70 and a half, April. So you don't necessarily have to take it that first year you turn 70 and a half. But if you hold off, then you have to double up in the following year. Where people get hung up is if they inherit an IRA from someone other than their spouse. Because whether it's mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, uncle, whoever, then you have to start taking your own required minimum distribution out, even if it's a Roth IRA, which is something that just drives people nuts. Because
Really? Wait
a minute, it's a Roth. Why do I have to take it out? Absolutely. And it's because they want to get that money back in circulation. If it were a Roth, you could just keep passing it on and on and on, forever. And that's not what the IRS wants. They want that money back in circulation where it can go into something else and be taxed.
And right, Roth is something that you haven't gotten a tax deduction on in
that's
the years
correct. That
you've been putting money in.
That's correct.
But when you start taking the money out—
It's tax-free. And so is the growth. But if you inherit a Roth IRA from someone other than your spouse, you still have to begin a required minimum distribution.
What's the penalty if you don't take the RMD, Agnes?
The penalty is big. It's 50%. It's 50%.
It's right out of the dark ages.
Yes.
I mean, think of the castles and the chains and everything.
It's 50% of the RMD amount.
Of the amount that you should have taken out. So if you were supposed to take $600 out, there's a $300 penalty if you do not take that $600 out.
Mm-hmm.
We have another RMD question here, and this one is from Rachel. She says, when giving a financial institution instructions on how much tax to withhold, can I estimate lower than I think might be required and then make up the difference at tax time?
Sure. There's no reason. You try to make it exact so that you don't have a payment due. But if you don't mind making that extra payment, there's nothing that says that you have to withhold a certain amount.
But Agnes, do they risk if they come in too short, do they risk then under withholding on their overall return
and
subjecting themselves to a penalty?
So there's a penalty if you don't have all your tax, or what is it, 90% of your
90%.
Tax? It's 90%. Okay. 90% of your taxes have to be paid by what date?
They have to be paid by January 15th.
Okay. And if you haven't done that, then another penalty.
Another penalty, correct.
While we're on the subject of required minimum distributions, RMDs, isn't there, and how often do you run into this, Jason and Agnes, where you have an age gap of more than 10 years between a husband and wife, and they have there's a separate calculation, isn't that correct?
Yeah, there's a different table.
Yes.
Right. Yep. So be aware of that if that's your situation, because you might be able to take out more, or actually maybe might be able to take less out if you want to.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. And also, we email us, talk@wvxu.org. And Greg sent us an email. Again, RMDs, they're the popular subject today. Greg is turning 70 and a half in November of next year. He plans to take his first RMD in December of next year. And he says, how should I schedule the payment of federal and state taxes to avoid a penalty for underpayment? Should I make quarterly tax payments throughout 2018 or ask my brokerage firm to just take a one-time withholding at the time of distribution? So what would be your advice, Jason?
Yeah, I think my recommendation is have them withhold, because withholding is treated as if it is paid throughout the year. So actually using your withholding is another tool that you can do for tax planning. So say you are running your tax projection for this year, and you feel like you might have an estimated tax penalty because you haven't paid in over the course of the year. You can actually use withholding to make up that gap, because it's always treated as paid ratably over the year. So I think the best way would be to have your custodian withhold.
And what say you, Agnes?
Oh, definitely. Have the custodian withhold, especially because that's going to be December. So even if you're going to delay, you're only going to delay it till January.
Plus, there's the thing of if you wait to, like the one question from Rachel, can I wait and or pay less and then just pay the rest at tax time. It's like Chris was saying, if you forget, my wife and I did this one year. We forgot, and when we were doing our taxes, it's like, oh no, there's another how many hundred dollars we have to account for to pay for that distribution. So it is better off if you just get it out of the way. 513-419-7100, and let's talk to Tom. Hi, Tom.
Hi. How are you today?
Good, thank you. Go right ahead with your question.
My question is, I'm 56. I had a fall about 15 years ago and broke my back and crushed my heel and had to go on disability early. And I don't know, I get, at the end of the year, every year I get a 1040, but I only get $713 a month. And I haven't filed taxes in years because I see no sense in it. But I do donate to organizations and things like that through the year. Do I even need to file taxes?
You do not need to file if your standard deduction is more than the amount that you earn. And if you're receiving Social Security is only taxable if you have other earned income or if your income is high enough to make it taxable. In your situation, if all you have is Social Security and you're giving gifts, there probably is not a tax filing requirement.
Hey, Tom, thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it. Let's talk to David. Hi, David.
Hi. So I had a question. I started a new job in Philadelphia this year, but I've kept my residence here in Ohio. So I'm commuting back and forth. Can I use that travel expense back and forth as part of my job related, for itemization, or is it just, that's just an expense I have to eat?
If it were a temporary situation, then there are rules associated with that. But if you've permanently changed your job, commuting to and from work is not a deductible item.
Regardless of how far it is.
Regardless of how far it is.
Okay, David, thank you very much for the question. We appreciate it. And if you have any questions about year-end taxes, 513-419-7100. We will continue our conversation, and you can also email us questions, talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and on this December 20th, we're discussing tax steps to take as 2017 draws to a close. Only 11 days left. Agnes Spelker, Senior Tax Manager with Barnes Denig, joins us. Also, Bartlett & Company Wealth Planning Services Advisor Jason Katz, and Chris DeSimio, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. And you can join us with your questions, 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Agnes, you have any, as far as RMDs, because they this time of year, especially with that December 31st deadline coming up, they always seem to draw so many questions. You have any other advice for how you handle an RMD, that required minimum distribution from your IRA?
Yes, I do. The required minimum distribution is one of the key tools that we have for charitable contributions that's still remaining. What you can do is you can give your required minimum distribution directly to a charity. That means you cannot touch that money. The money goes directly from your advisor to the charity. And you don't have to pick that up in income. You don't pay tax on it. You don't get a deduction for it. But you don't have to pay tax on that money. So these are things, if you were going to give it to a charity anyways, you might as well give it through your RMD.
So, but the key thing is directly. So you'd contact the charity and tell them, this is what I want to do. And they'd be able to tell you that these are the steps I should take.
That is correct.
Okay.
And your advisor should be able to tell you the steps that they can take.
Yeah. Please be wary that there really aren't 11 days. There might be 11 calendar days.
Well, that's true. They aren't all business days.
There are six trading days left. And I think Christmas Eve usually is abbreviated. I was just checking here on my iPhone to make sure. But normally the market will close early on Christmas Eve. That way your financial professionals can get a head start on their Christmas shopping. And sometimes if you want to have your required minimum distribution or any distribution take the form of what's called in-kind. Let's say you don't want to sell anything. Let's say you own shares of XYZ company and you like it, or a mutual fund that you want to own outside your IRA and you want to have that sent to you in kind, then you may have to fill out a separate form. So just, it's a good time. If you haven't done so yet, please don't call on December 31st.
And ask to do this.
Yeah, expecting, you know, the Cirque du Soleil version of getting the RMD out, because it's not easy.
And it is a lot more difficult this year, too, because the 31st is on a Sunday. So you don't have an extra, it's not like you have until Monday. Well, it has to be done beforehand.
Another idea, another piece of advice from personal experience with having to take the RMD is that you can ask your whoever's holding your money, you can say, set something up automatic so I don't have to think about it.
That's correct.
Absolutely. Each year on this date, as long as it's before the before December 31st, send me the check. So that's one good way to do it, and you don't have to think about it. You just program it and you go.
Yeah, the one other thing on the qualified charitable distribution from the IRA that some folks overlook is that especially if you're Ohio resident, which is an AGI state, it starts with your AGI, that distribution isn't included in your adjusted gross income. So you're actually going to save on state taxes as well when you do that strategy. So it's just something that is an added benefit to doing this charitable distribution from your IRA.
What about the idea, because Agnes is talking about donating from your IRA.
Directly to a charity.
Right, directly to a charity, your RMD. What about the idea of donating a stock, Chris, that's appreciated?
That's not in your IRA.
That's not in your
IRA. That's always a good idea. I mean, if you are charitably inclined anyway, and especially if you are over-concentrated in a position, a company you may have worked at, for example, that's a great way to reduce or relieve the pressure caused by the excess shares of your company, the concentrated position risk. Use that as currency, because you get to take a deduction. Agnes, correct me if I'm wrong, but you should get to take a deduction. Well, heads are nodding up and down based on what it's worth, not what you paid for it.
That is correct. You get the fair market value.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And I did just verify, by the way, the New York Stock Exchange will close Friday at 2 o'clock.
So a short
Eastern.
Day.
No.
So a
Eastern.
Short day on Friday.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
513-419-7100. If you've got any year-end tax questions, let's talk to Kathy. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
Go right ahead, Kathy, with your question.
I have been waiting until almost age 70 to take my Social Security. I have a pension, but when I spoke to Social Security, he asked me if I'd like to go back 6 months and take this distribution in advance. So I did, and it's almost $10,000. And I'm wondering about how I will be taxed on that, since there was no tax withheld from it.
Social Security is taxed on a graduated level, but fairly quickly it goes to 85% of your Social Security is taxable. The first part is not. So depending on how high your pension is, it could be that 85% of that Social Security money will be taxable.
And doesn't it also depend on that there's a wide disparity between someone who files singly and someone joint?
That is correct.
Yeah, the other thing to think about, too, is the pension itself, if it's a government pension, that receiving that pension might actually reduce your Social Security benefit. So it's important to do that calculation under whether it's – if it's a spousal benefit, that's under the government pension offset. And if it's under your benefit, it's the WEP reduction.
Windfall elimination program.
Yes.
Kathy, thank you much for the call. And again, if you have any questions, 513-419-7100. We had a question, let's see here, come in about Bitcoin taxation. Let's see here. Yeah, James. James emailed us. He says, does anybody have any idea on how profits from Bitcoins might be taxed?
Gambling winnings? Would it be a 1099-G?
I don't know.
That's a great answer.
And again, you'll have to help me out with this. Would it be like how gold is taxed? How commodities are taxed, maybe?
I believe so. It's going to be your cost basis versus what the amount that you received. So the difference between what you put in and what you take out.
So if I pay $100 for something and then it's worth $600, the gain's $500, mm-hmm. and that's what you're paying your taxes on.
But Agnes, that leads to another question, because just this week, futures on Bitcoin started trading on both the CME and the CBOE, the options and commodities exchanges, and those are taxed a little differently, are they not?
They are. I mean, it could be that it could be ordinary or capital, depending on the situation.
Right. So good luck.
Long term and short term, and yes.
I'd stick with the 1099-G for gambling winnings, actually.
Might be more favorable. Mm. Let's see here. Student loan interest. Okay, Matt wants to ask about that and how the new tax law is going to affect that. Hi, Matt.
Hi. So my question was just, is in the newest iteration of the tax law, can you still deduct student loan interest that you have paid for the fiscal year?
Yes. And the House had said no, that they weren't going to allow student loan interest. The final bills right now say that student loan interest is deductible.
Okay.
Yep.
That's
concur.
The case.
Yep.
Concur. Okay, so we've got both of you on the same page here. That's good. Thank you, Matt. We appreciate the call. Again, 513-419-7100. Emily emailed. She has a question about, it's another RMD question, required minimum distribution. She says, and I think we discussed this, if her RMD goes directly to a charity, does she have to pay a tax on it? No, she does not.
She does not.
Okay. So I'm not even an accountant. I learned something new.
And Agnes, isn't that also true, Agnes and Jason, isn't it also true that people are doing this because by doing the gift, making the gift directly from your IRA account to the charity, it also keeps it off your 1099 so that it may not cause your other income to be exposed to tax?
It's actually included on the 1099, but you don't report it as taxable income on your tax return.
So it might not cause you to have to pay more in taxes on your Social Security or other income if you do it directly from the IRA.
From the IRA, that's correct.
And Emily had a two-part question, too. She wanted to know if the cost of medical board exams are deductible as a work expense.
If it's to gain you a new position, no. If it's a job, if it's to continue with the same job that you're doing, yes.
Okay, so that's the key. Gaining a new position, it would not be. But if it's part of your work routine, then it is.
Then it is deductible.
Deductible. Okay. Another question. This one has to do with the new tax bill. And this is from Terry, who emailed, and she says, I've heard that as a sole proprietor, I'm not going to be able to itemize and deduct my business expenses. And I've heard that the amount and type of deductions that businesses and banks can take have been increased, while my options of as a sole proprietor have been decreased. So she's asked, and there's still a lot that we don't know about this new bill yet, but she's asking, is this true? Clear this up for me if you can do it. And she says a lot of her friends who are sole proprietors have the same concern and same question.
I'd be glad to do that. We don't know what the final bill is going to be, but no, it has not taken that away. It's taken away the itemized deduction portion. So we're only talking about itemized deduction when we're talking about limiting those business expenses and stuff. So you have, if you're a sole proprietor, you file a Schedule C. You still report that income and you still get those deductions coming down to a number. Now, you may also get, depending on what you do and how you do it, you may get a 20% discount also, a 20% reduction in the total income.
Yeah, I think maybe the confusing point is in the proposal, there is a disallowance for employee unreimbursed business expenses. So if you have an employer and you have an expense that is not being reimbursed by your employer, those in the tax proposal are no longer allowed as itemized deductions. So yeah. A little bit different.
I might add also that the Wall Street Journal this morning had a really excellent, not to be a shill for the Wall Street Journal, but it's probably other places too, but they had a really good summary of some of the changes that affect 401ks and IRAs. One of them, for example, if you should have a loan against your 401k, you now have more time to pay it than you did before under the new tax bill. And frequently, we're talking about required minimum distributions, but there's this little window. Actually, it's a big window. It's about a 10-year window between the time you're 59 and a half and maybe you retired early and the time you have to begin to take money away from your IRA accounts at age 70 and a half, where the game has always been to play how much money can you get from your IRA account and pay as little taxes as possible. How close can you get? It's kind of like a limbo thing, you know, where you're trying to go beneath the bar and get as much out as you possibly can. And one of the most common ways to do that is to if you don't need the money to spend, to take the money out of your traditional IRA and convert it to a Roth IRA. And there used to be no big penalty. It was one of the few gimmies or that the IRS would allow. If you, for example, if you thought that you could convert $10,000 from your traditional IRA to a Roth IRA, pay the taxes, and if you went a little over and inadvertently pushed yourself into a higher bracket, you could always say, oh, whoops, I want to recharacterize that conversion. I want to back it out. I want to unwind it.
You can backtrack on the conversion then?
You used to be able to.
Okay, you used to be able to.
And it's common, you know, it's a common assumption. Look, we don't have to be careful here because even if you go over a little bit, not a big deal. In fact, under the old, there were people who would say, well, you don't even have to unwind it or recharacterize it until you file on that included extension. So you had like 10 and a half months to get it right. Well, now, under the new law, apparently, this is according to the Wall Street Journal, you don't have that luxury anymore. You got to be as close as possible. And if you go over, that's just too bad.
Yeah, recharacterizations are a thing of the past, according to the proposal. So you have to, just like Chris said, you have to get it right. These strategies of a lot of people are doing these Roth conversions by asset class and playing the game of which ones went up and which ones went down. And if, you know, if they went down, I can just recharacterize that. So that kind of planning may be a thing of the past.
Again, if you have any questions, year-end tax planning or questions about the new tax law, 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. And Keith joins us. Hi, Keith.
Hi. My compliments on a timely show. I have a question. This tax year, I will be able to itemize. The question is, does it make sense to prepay 2018's property taxes, pull it into this tax year so I can get the full write-off versus the $10,000 limit next year for a combination of property taxes and state income tax?
Keith, if you are, it depends on what state you are and how taxes are put together. So in Ohio, real estate taxes are paid in arrears. So you're going to pay your 2017 taxes are not due until 2018. So in that case, definitely you want to go ahead and pay it that way. Kentucky has, different rules where it's actually due in November, December. Kentucky won't allow you to prepay it. I know New York won't allow you to prepay it. And so it really depends on the state that you're in on whether this actually makes sense.
Yeah. And the other caveat being, too, is whether you're subject to the alternative minimum tax, too, because you wouldn't necessarily get the benefit this year. It would be added back for alternative minimum tax.
Yeah. So the alternative minimum tax survived in this tax bill. It didn't go away.
It didn't.
But it did get really expanded. There are going to be very, very few people in alternative minimum tax, where in the past there were quite a few.
Where's the threshold income-wise now, Agnes?
The threshold, what do you
for
mean?
AMT.
AMT, the exemption starts to be phased out at $1 million. So that's a big jump from $160,000,
right,
where the exemption was phased out previously.
513-419-7100. Carlos, good afternoon.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Bear with me for a minute. The story goes back to 2007. My father-in-law passed away, and he owned a few rental properties, few buildings. And at that time, 2007, the height of the real estate market, the buildings were appraised over $1 million. Then the trust filed the federal income tax, and we actually had to pay money on the fictitious values of the buildings. After the market crashed and we had to sell the properties, they actually sold for less than 50% of that value. Is there a way that I can get any of the money that we paid the federal government on capital gains?
So you had to pay the estate tax on the buildings when you inherited them, and then you had to sell them, excuse me, for about half of their value. So the question is there any way you can claim this as a loss?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the question is what have you been doing with the buildings? If these were rental properties, you've probably taken depreciation. So you've probably taken depreciation on the $1 million or whatever was reported in the estate tax. So you would be looking at what the value was at the estate tax. You'd be looking at how much depreciation you took, and that's going to be your cost basis. So you may actually have a gain on the sale of these properties if the property has been fully depreciated or depreciated at all.
Mm-hmm. So how does he figure all this? Where does he start with this?
He starts with finding out, did he, you know, has, if they're rental properties, which that's what you indicated back in 2007.
Peak of the market.
But you would have gotten the advantage of taking more depreciation on those properties through these whatever last few years. Okay. So it all depends on how much depreciation you've taken. So you need to look at that closely to see whether there's a loss or a gain.
Okay. Carlos, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Let's talk to James. Hi, James.
Hello. Yes, hi. I just bought a home this summer, and I've heard a lot of talk back and forth about a deduction for mortgage interest, but I hadn't heard where it fell. And I just want to know, am I better off with the new tax bill or the old tax bill as a new homeowner?
As a new homeowner, you were better off with the old tax bill as far as everything in total. As far as mortgage interest, the only difference with mortgage interest is that instead of $1 million, you can only deduct interest from $750,000. And then you cannot deduct anything from
the home equity loan.
Existing home equity loans, I guess what I'm getting at, are ones that are already affected, are they affected by this, or is it just home equity loans taken out starting next year?
So I think, you know, this is a misconception out there, too. It's the devil's in the details. So if you used your home equity loan to purchase the home, so treated it kind of like a mortgage, that will continue to be deductible. If you have a home equity loan, though, that you use to pay off a car loan or use to pay off credit card debt or just use the money cash out.
Home improvements
would be good, right?
They
would be good. So, going forward, it's a little, again, the proposal's not as detailed, so it's really hard to tell exactly how those home equity line of credit and loans are going to be treated.
There is question out there on whether the home equity at all. According to what I've read, it is based on just the principal purchase of a home. Mm-hmm. Home equity doesn't count whether it's used for improvements or anything. It was only in purchasing that initial home.
And hasn't it been true over the course of your careers as, you know, in accounting and tax work that once a big tax law is issued, then the service issues all these technical memoranda about exactly how to interpret it. This could go on for quite a while.
Yes.
So adjustment after adjustment is
yes.
Yeah. To the best of your knowledge, has anything changed with respect to taxes due upon the sale of someone's principal residence? Because that was, you know, a huge wealth accretion for a lot of people. They buy a house, you know, many, many years ago. They sell it, and under current law, they could exclude from their taxable income a good deal of the gain. Was that left unscathed?
They can still do that. The only thing that was actually out there was just expanding the time period that somebody had to hold the house. So somebody that's held it for 20 years, there was never any question that would not be part of the old law.
Slow motion flippers need not worry.
Yeah. So there was a proposal to make it you had to be in the house 5 out of the last 8 years. The current law is 2 out of the last 5, and the two out of the last 5 years is the one that won. So
good information.
No change.
Thank you.
We will continue our conversation after this, and we'll take your phone calls 513-419-7100. So if you have any year-end tax questions or questions about the new tax law, 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and we're talking about tax steps to take as 2017 draws to a close and the impact of the new tax law. And joining me this afternoon, Agnes Spelker, who's Senior Tax Manager with Barnes Denig, Bartlett & Company Wealth Planning Services Advisor Jason Katz, and Chris DeSimio, Financial Advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. You can join us, 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Chris was asking about things that were that escaped unscathed in this tax law. I had a couple of questions. 401k, there had been talk about altering that. There had been talk about altering the rules on HSAs. But what ended up happening with both those things?
Yeah, 401k deductions, again, they didn't get hurt unscathed. So no change there. And the other one was
HSAs. FSAs, I guess, would be the same in the same category.
No change. Some of those other things, you know, we mentioned it before, student loan interest, and the sale of the principal residence that we were just, discussing. And also one other thing, it was a little bit, smaller scope was the, proposal for FIFO. So when you sold a security.
First in, first out.
First in, first out. There was a proposal to make you sell the shares. If you're selling something less than the full position in a stock, you had to sold your oldest shares first. Whereas now you can specifically identify which stocks and which lots you want to sell. So that did not get passed. So that's a really good thing for taxpayers.
You know, and as far as year-end tax planning goes, HSAs, health savings accounts, those just roll over year to year. But you need to be, I guess, Agnes, you need to be thinking about the flexible spending account, the FSA, because that money, whatever you've put in and gotten your tax break on during the course of the year, you need to make sure you get it back out.
It has to be taken out before the end of the year. Well, the expenses have to be incurred before the end of the year. Yeah. Now, depending on your plan, they could have extended it.
and it's no... It's,
but a short period.
It's no accident that this is a time of year that all the people who sell, who are in the eyeglass business, they're advertising very heavily because it's I'm not making this up. It's very common for people who have not yet fully used up the money that they've set aside in these flexible spending accounts that they say, oh, may as well get some glasses again, get another pair. I sat on these things or whatever. Because you got to use it.
To make sure you get those expenses in before the end of the year.
Evelyn emailed and she inherited money that's now in a checking account. She wants to know if there's any benefit to putting that into an IRA now versus waiting to do it next year.
Okay. If it's inherited money, it sounds like it wasn't in an IRA to begin with.
Right.
If you just want to put it in there, you're saying, do I want to do it this year or next year? It depends on whether you're allowed to do it. As far as reducing taxes, we want to reduce taxes this year with the expectation that the new law is going to increase the tax liability.
And she still have until April 15th to do that.
She does.
For the 2017 year.
But it has to be on her own income.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
513-419-7100. Let's talk to Jim. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, thank you.
I have a question here. I heard you mention a little bit ago about unreimbursed expenses. I do take Social Security, and I also do part-time Uber driving, and I've always been able to take that 55 cents or whatever it is a mile because I get nothing reimbursed. Am I still going to be able to do that?
If you are an employee, you will not be able to do it. If you are an independent contractor, you can do it. And I don't know what – do you get a W-2 or a 1099? If you get a W-2 –
If you get
a 1099, you file that on a Schedule C. You report all the income. You report all the expenses and pay net.
Jim, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Let's talk to Amy. Good afternoon, Amy.
Hi. I am calling about the marriage penalty tax with the Affordable Care Act. In 2016, I got married in August. Prior to our wedding, I was insured through the Affordable Care Act, and then in September, I was switched over to my husband's insurance. When 2017 came around, we had to file joint. And when you sign the line on the ACA, you agree that if you get married, you are going to do that. You have to do that. Well, we paid dearly for it. And so I am wondering, now that I'm in a full year of no ACA, do we have to continue to file joint because we did one time? I am also a sole proprietor, and I do also file a Schedule C, and I would like to do it separate. Would be helpful to both of us if we did. And I just want to make sure that I know.
Okay, there's a big difference between filing single versus filing joint. If you file married filing joint, or if you are married, you either have to file married filing joint or you have to file married filing separate. So there, the tax rates are exactly one half if you file married filing separate as they are with married filing joint. So that marriage penalty is there whether you file separate or whether you file joint. You have the options of doing that. You need to look at both ways to see whether it makes more sense. But typically for federal purposes, you're going to be better off filing joint. Now, as far as the marriage penalty and the new law is concerned, the marriage penalty goes away for all brackets except the very last bracket. So maybe you got caught in the first few years, but maybe by 2018, if you're not in that highest tax bracket, then you really won't have a marriage penalty at that point in time.
Amy, thank you for the question. We appreciate it. Let's talk to Maria. Hi, Maria.
Hi. I was calling my daughter recently. Her father recently died, and she will be receiving an inheritance of under $14,000, and I didn't know what the taxes would be for that.
Inherited money is not taxed. Inherited, the money that you actually receive is not taxed. There's an inheritance tax, which is paid by the estate of the person that died. But any money that you receive is not taxed unless it's in an IRA or a retirement account.
That's something else that changed with the new law, too, is that the federal estate tax, the limit's much, much higher
doubled.
Now, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah,
absolutely doubled. So, yeah, that was a big change. So the current level is about 5.6, and it's going to about 11.2 million per person, so 22.4 for a married couple. So double the amount. And basically what that means is that that's the exemption amount. So if you have an estate, so if you add up all of your assets, investable, real estate, everything, and you're under those levels, you won't have an estate tax.
Mm-hmm. Now that is set to expire at 2025. And it may go back to the $5 million with the additional amounts. So there is some planning that you may want to be doing between now and then.
To the best of your knowledge, has the inclusion of the face value of life insurance proceeds owned by the person who passed away, is that still included in the estate? Or is that changed at all?
I haven't seen any change.
Yeah. If the owner is the person that died, then yes.
Even though the income, the proceeds are not income taxable, they're still included in the
estate. They're still
estate.
Included yeah. in the estate. That is correct.
So don't turn your back on it.
Now, there are ways to allow the kids to go ahead and pay for that life insurance and have it be their life insurance on the person that died. Then it's not included in the estate. But if the person that's paying the estate, the person whose estate it is paying the life
pay
insurance,
for the policy, then
it's their, right.
Yeah.
Then it gets included in the estate.
And, of course, we can't forget there are still a lot of states that have estate taxes in place.
Oh, yes.
Ohio doesn't anymore, right?
Ohio
they haven't
does
had for
not.
Several years. What about Kentucky? Are they – do we know?
Inheritance yeah. tax.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe that Kentucky does, but I'm not positive.
Okay. So you have to take state estate taxes into consideration on this too. But as far as the federal goes now, the exemption's so high, you're probably not going to see too many people affected by this.
That's correct.
True.
Yeah. Bill joins us now. Hi, Bill.
How's it going?
Good, thank you. Go right ahead.
Okay, so I found out that I've overpaid taxes through my work. I went ahead and filed through the locality 2 years and recouped my taxes through there. However, there was additional years that I've overpaid. So I wanted to find out, and on top of that, was there anything else that I would able to I would be able to do on my taxes to be able to maybe write that off as a loss? Or just tax-wise, you know, since I know that money was sitting in this one locality, am I able to claim it for this year?
Now, what happened is when that money was withheld and before you filed, you took a deduction for that as an itemized deduction. So you've already taken a deduction for it. The fact that you waited too long, that you can't go back and the locality won't let you amend, there is not a loss on that money. That's just money that you have not gone back to do, as long as you cannot go back and amend.
Okay. Tom joins us. Hi, Tom.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
Quick question. I'm a sole proprietorship, Schedule C. And I understand there were some changes in the law about investments and investments in the business. So I was just curious, do you know anything about, like, if I'm looking to purchase a new car, Was there any advantages now with the new law?
Depreciation versus expensing it.
Right. Mm-hmm. As far as the new law, there's more. There, depreciation has gone up. The amount that you can take on Section 179 has gone way up. As far as a sole proprietor, unless you're buying $1 million worth of additional depreciation, I don't know that there's anything additional with that.
Yeah, the other thing that also is set to change is increase in the bonus depreciation from 50% to 100%. Again, that's banded between actually September 27th of 17 to January 1st of 23. So again, it's one of these things that's temporary, and then it goes to a different amount. So 179 again was expanded. Bonus depreciation was also expanded. So positive.
So a car is not going to be more than $1 million. You can go ahead and expense the whole thing as long as it's fully business purpose and it's not a luxury automobile. There's limitations on that also.
Let's talk to Carlisle. Hi, Carlisle.
Yes. I was calling to find out if the personal and dependent exemption had been eliminated. I know there was discussions of eliminating that. And if it has been eliminated, isn't that going to offset the increase in standard deductions for a family of three or four?
That is correct. But there are credits out there available. The child tax credit, so someone under 16 in your household, has gone from $1,000 to $2,000. There's also a dependent care credit, which will be brand new. If these laws all, everything goes through, that's $500. So to offset the exemption, you've got the credits, and then you also have the increase in the standard deduction.
So the standard deduction for single went to what, 12?
24. Single is 12.
12, okay. And then married?
24.
24,000. So it sounds like for a lot of people, that's what's going to happen. I mean, the majority of them are probably going to claim that standard deduction as opposed to itemizing under this new law.
That's correct. And simplification of the law. The idea was for people to be able to do a tax return on a postcard. That's not going to be the case. But a lot more people are going to take the standard deduction.
Let's talk to Steve. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Yeah, I had a question about HSA and FSA. My wife actually has an HSA through her work, and I am able to get an FSA through my job, but I've heard contradictory information. Some people say it's okay to do that, and others say it's not. So I'm just wondering what the law is on that.
So,
in other words, can you have both an HSA and an FSA? Can one family member have the HSA, the other the FSA, I guess? Is that what you're asking, Steve?
Yes.
Okay.
There are limitations on the amount that you can put in the HSA, and it's based on, so she holds the insurance and she holds it for the family. There's a limitation on how much that she can put into. You can put money into a cafeteria plan, but those expenses have to be used before the end of the year.
And that's the FSA.
That's right? The FSA.
The flexible spending account.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we've run out of time. Yet there's so much to talk about with this new tax bill, but I guess we'll be learning as we go here, Jason.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us today. Agnes Spelker, who's Senior Tax Manager with Barnes Denig, Bartlett & Company Wealth Planning Services Advisor Jason Katz, and Chris DeSimio, who's a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. And listeners are reminded that the information provided on the show is general in nature and may not apply to your personal investment situation.